Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Peterson Toyota, your local Toyota dealer serving Fort Collins, Loveland, Windsor, and Tynmouth, and has been doing so for more than 50 years. Not only will you find the latest Toyota models, you'll also find a friendly and accommodating staff eager to assist you. You'll receive first-class attention, whether it be a service appointment, help picking out the right part for your Toyota, or test driving a new or pre-owned vehicle. Whatever you're looking for, Peterson's expert staff will help you find the one that's right for you, all at a competitive pricing and financing. Peterson strives to be the best in everything they do, and they will take care of you. If you're in the market for a new or used vehicle, please give Peterson Toyota a first shot at your business. Thanks. Enjoy the show. Welcome to Ram Nation Radio. I'm Joel Cantalamessa here with my usual cohort, Mike Rowe, and a very special guest, Steve Ivey of Crackers College Hoops. Man, he's doing a great job. Just wrote a nice recap of the season opener last night, and he's, what, on his fifth episode of his new podcast? It's been so great to listen to, Steve. You're doing a good job. You are a natural at it, and I know that it's not just me that's enjoying it. We're getting a lot of people on Ram Nation talking about it. As soon as a new one drops, they're right on it. They're like, Steve dropped a new episode. Get on it. So doing a great job there, buddy, and really enjoying that. I'm sure that you are enjoying doing it as well. And I mean, you're all over the place. You're here. You're with Brady every week now, and you got your own stuff. You're here. You're there. You're every effing where. Steve,
I'm not really kidding anymore.
I'm trying to challenge. Hey, Amy, I'm trying to achieve the heights of Amy Parsons. I can't even come close to her. That woman is everywhere.
She is everywhere.
It is amazing. What an energetic, special talent she is. She's amazing.
I don't know how she finds the time to do everything that she does. It's pretty astonishing. But it is great to have a president that's that invested in, especially in athletics and all the other activities she's supporting every day. But, hey, I know we're going to talk a little bit about last night's basketball game, and we're going to have Milt Palacio on, former great point guard for CSU back from 1996 to 1999, just went into the Hall of Fame, CSU Hall of Fame, and we'll have a great conversation with him. But before we do that, we're just going to talk a little football. I don't want to talk too much about it because I'll be honest, I'm depressed about our football situation right now. I don't have a whole lot of desire to go deep into it. Was very ticked off on Friday. We were in, my wife and I and my other daughter were in Bozeman visiting our son. It was his 21st birthday out there. And so we went and we were on the town and went to dinner, and I'm watching the game on my phone, kind of living and dying with every play and not being present at all with my family, which my wife was not happy about. And then like, it just ruined the rest of my night. Like it just, the way that game went, losing to a rival yet again. Guys, when is this program ever going to get over the damn hump and win some meaningful games that we care about? Mike?
You know.
Ever?
You're right. It does suck.
We've won one rivalry game in the last 20 tries.
It's a tough spot right now. It's just a broken record player. You know, you could go back to every podcast we've done since the Washington State game. I say the same freaking thing every freaking week. Like, our play calling puts us behind. You know, it's a 10-7 game coming out of halftime. You know, we're right there. I mean, we're in this freaking game. And we go under center, one back, and we run it up the middle twice. It's third and nine. You know, the thing with especially when we're playing Calhoun and Bull, they've coached against Jay every year that Jay has been a head coach. Jay always brags about how few plays are in his playbook. Well, you know what? Those guys on the other side know your freaking playbook. They do. And when it's third and nine, we know what's going to happen, and they know that our best route to pick up 9 yards is a crossing route to Holker or Horton. I mean, there was three guys right there. And I kind of thought Holker gave up on that play. I thought he could have at least knocked the ball down. He just seemed to kind of stop and pick. Touchdown a few plays later, 10-7 game turns into 17-7 game. Then two rushes, third and long, we actually get the first down. And then it's like, okay, they know what he's going to do. So everybody's back in coverage. Tries to hit Holker again. Three guys around him. Another pick. Another touchdown. Game over. And you know, and we made it close. We're driving, and our center decides to throw a 95-mile-an-hour fastball off of Braden's thigh.
And early, like, wow, he wasn't ready for it. Yeah, that was
God. Just... Hey, credit to was it Ross Simmons? Was it Justice or was it Brown? Yeah. It's Justice.
Yeah, it was. Freaking... It was.
He tracked him down. Yeah, he tracked him down, and that. I mean, that was a hustle play, and that's what kind of gives you a little bit of hope. Like, these guys, they're not folding, they're not quitting, they're not sulking. They're still playing their butts off. But we're just a program right now that just doesn't really know how to win. It's like, there's always a play that you could get off the field and secure a win that we don't ever seem to come up with. And, you know, we're just mistake prone. I mean, the 3 second half turnovers are just killers. And, you know, Braden is young and he's got some time to learn, but, and he's done a lot of good things this year, but he's also had some moments where he's made some have just been bad decisions where he didn't read the defense right. Like that second pick he had on Friday night, and then some were just poor throws. So I don't know. But, you know, at the end of the day, Jay Norvell said it. He said 15 points isn't enough in this league to win. So they're not getting it done offensively. I thought the defense puts you in a position to win. But Jay's offense is, by and large, just not doing enough or just making too many mistakes. Steve, any
– I want to say one thing. Hold on, I want to say one thing, and Joel, you jumped in on this too. I wasn't very happy with my co-host. You guys were kind of putting it to Braden on the Ram Club message board and about what, you know, we haven't had improvement. We have, you know, still seeing the same stuff. I mean, everybody puts Bradley on this pedestal, and like that's where we want our quarterbacks to be. You look at his numbers, his first year as a starter, his sophomore year, he barely got over 1,200 yards passing. He threw 8 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. He had, I think he had 600 yards receiving and rushing. He didn't have a good year, and they were 4-5. You got to remember back then in 2001, we had an 11-game season. Regular season, and we were 4-5 going into our last two games where we had to win. But that last loss, he threw 3 interceptions that game. You know, he hurt us a lot of those games that we lost. So Braden's going to make mistakes, but we got 3 games that we can win that I think we should win. And if he gets us those 3 wins, and if Jay gets us those 3 wins, then I think a lot can be forgiven for this year, including losing to our rivals. It sucks, and it sucks that we could possibly be 3-0 against them, 2-1, but we're 0-3. I get that. I hate it, you know. But, again, if we can win these last 3 and get to a bowl, get to the New Mexico Bowl, which is what a lot of people are putting us into, you know, a lot's forgiven.
Yeah. Steve, did you have any takeaways from the game? Any observations?
Just a couple of things. Let's from a higher level. When Jay says you're not going to win games with scoring 15 points, I'm going to take a little bit of an issue with that. And I'm going to relate that back to a Van Pelt type of attitude, which would be if the other team has 15, we need to get 16. Somehow you just need to beat the other team by a point. And that means sometimes playing great defense and winning games 15 to 14. So I take a little bit of an issue with that. But the other thing is, I am so tired of this 1-19, this losing to rivals. Three more opportunities gone down the drain this year. But I told a story on Brady's show the other day. I was out walking the dog on Sunday morning, and I had a neighbor of mine who has a dog that my dog knows, and she's a big CSU fan, but she said, "I stayed up late on Saturday night. Wasn't it fun to watch CU lose?" And, that was a little bit of a cleansing experience for me. I'm sorry. You're not supposed to feel better about yourself when your rivals lose. But in that case, it was a cleansing thing for me. And if it can go on and it's time to move on from that Wyoming game, let's go on and see him play three really good games and see how things end up at the end of the year. They still have a shot at a bowl game. And I still like Jay. I still want to see Jay succeed. And I think there's still enough talent on this team that I think they can win the last three, but they're going to have to play awfully well.
Yeah. Well, your neighbor's not wrong. I mean, that's what we've been kind of resorted to, that we have to take pleasure in our rivals losing as bad as we've been ourselves. But yeah, as you guys pointed out, we got games against San Diego State, Nevada, and Hawaii remaining, Hawaii on the road. They have a combined record of 8-20. And San Diego State and Hawaii each have three wins. Nevada has two. So these games, I mean, they should be wins. I mean, if you have any aspirations of improving your season, these got to be three wins. Two of them are at home. You got to like our chances to go 6-6, get all three of those and go bowling. But it's hard for me to have faith that we'll do it just because, I'm in prove it mode right now. I've been optimistic, and I'm not seeing us make the winning plays. We let too many games slip away, and it just somehow seems to me like we'll blow it. So I'm trying to stay positive. Should be able to beat the Aztecs Saturday, and then a dreadful team against Nevada next week. And although they'll be gunning for us again, I like our chances of both of those. And it kind of sets up a pitfall game with all the marbles on the table on the island at Hawaii. So we'll see if Jay and company can get it done. He really has to. I mean, I think missing a bowl game this year would be a major letdown. I think the fans will be out with pitchforks, which is silly. Too early for that. But, just having extra practice time, getting a 13th game in is all going to be great for development. And you have a chance to finish on a 4-game win streak if you do that, So that there alone would set you up for next year with a little bit of momentum, no matter the fact that none of the teams that we've beat. So think about this. None of the teams that we've beat or will have beaten this year, if we win these next three, will have a winning record. Or do have a winning record at the moment. Boise got the best chance to finish with them on there, and they're 4-5. So, but I gotta kind of laugh at the fire culture that persists on Twitter and even Ram Nation, people that want Jay Norvell fired already. And, I know this isn't where we want to be this year. Although we do still have a chance to finish strong, but I think the program needs consistency. Jay is not the bristly, ruffling feathers curmudgeon that his predecessor Adazio was. He's a likable, he's a good human. I think he's the kind of figure that his players love, and the kind of guy that, he can endear himself to the community and the program and get people to hop aboard. Just need some wins, and they're doing a good job recruiting. He's got coaching continuity. He's kept the whole staff for a second year. The team is buying in, and I think they play to the final buzzer and they play hard. So he's got to at least get 3 years, and in my opinion, four. So it drives me crazy. You guys have probably seen it, but the people that are calling for his head and wants everybody fired there was people calling for guys to be kicked off the basketball team last night and Nico to be fired and stupid stuff like that at halftime. Like, can we play maybe 40 minutes before you make such ignorant statements. So that's just, I guess, the culture we have today.
Well, we all know that me hugging Jay after the Boise game was one of the reasons why we lost these last two games. So I want to apologize for that. You know, I shouldn't have given him that hug. So to Ram Nation, I'm sorry.
I'm not even going to bring that up. The fact that we were basically pointed at as the reason why CSU's football culture stinks. So anyway, let's move on past football. It's caused
something positive.
It's caused me enough heartburn and dismay. But let's talk about basketball. First of all, the doubleheader last night, we'll talk a lot about the women's game, but they did take care of business with Lemoyne. Lemoyne moved up from D2 to D1 this year, the part of the Northeast Conference. They won 69-49 last night. McKenna Hofschild led all scorers with 24 points and 5 assists. Megan Boyd had 15, and former Cherry Creek Bruin Callie Clark had 12 rebounds in just 18 minutes of play. So shaking off a little rust there in the opener. Good win for them. And then the men's team, it was a little bit of a rough first half against Louisiana Tech, who looked pretty good right out of the gates. I thought the Rams were pretty poor defensively the first probably, 30 minutes of the game, but really flipped the switch in the final 10 minutes. Bulldogs went up 57-47 with just over 12 minutes left in the game. Jalen Henderson made a layup, and then the Bulldogs didn't make another field goal for 8 minutes. Tyler Henry hit a jumper, and between that span of those two baskets, the Rams had swung the lead to 70-59. So a nice job making adjustments on D and being able to finally start scoring a little bit. So Steve, what's you were there. I did not make it. I had to watch on the Mountain West Network, but tell us what happened in that span. What were the changes that were made, and how were we able to kind of turn the tide?
You know, it was a fun game. Obviously, I'm all in on this team. I really, really like this team. I've been to a lot of practices, and I really, really like the way this team is coming together. But it was their first rodeo in front of a crowd, and Nico had been concerned that they might have a little bit of a little bit of nerves. And he Nico mentioned to me after the game, he thought Nick Clifford was maybe a little bit edgy at the start of the game, and thought the rest of the team was too. And so they had a hard time settling in, and it was going to be a tough game. Louisiana Tech isn't a schlub team. They're 115th, I think, in KenPom.com. So top third team, one of the top Conference USA teams, brought in a lot of players this year out of the portal. And, you know, if you listen to my, my preview, one of the things that is apparent is how difficult it is with these early games with teams that are built in the portal. You have no video, no film on any of these players, who even the starters are going to be, who the three-point shooters are. All they knew about Louisiana Tech was they had a preseason conference player of the year in Isaiah Crawford. And a lot of what they did in preparation for the game was figure out how they were going to guard Crawford. And then they were going to go, basically it was play it by ear for how they were going to defend the rest of the game. And they did an unbelievable job on Crawford. I'm going to call out Joel Scott. You know, they could have gone with a few different kinds of defenders, but they went with Joel Scott on Crawford, and they shot him to 6 points, mm-hmm. a guy who was going to score 20, and did a great job. But as you said, they struggled defensively, especially in the start of the second half, Louisiana Tech went to maybe a little more of a spread offense, and were going very much one-on-one. They'd set a screen, try and spring a guy into the lane, made their first 7 shots. They were red hot. Things didn't look so good. But that 12-minute mark, Nico made a little bit of a change, and they started switching the screens on the perimeter. And that really, with Crawford fouling out of the game, the switching of the screens, it put a lot of pressure on the Louisiana Tech guys who didn't quite have the ability to deal with the switching. And you could see them visibly tiring as well. I don't know if it was elevation or just the fact that CSU was playing pretty hard. So that fueled, that's what started the comeback. And then all of a sudden you get a three-pointer from Neek Clifford, a three-pointer from Cartier. The lead goes to two in a heartbeat, and they just kept up the intensity, just grinding them out. Stevens getting to the rim, guys getting fouled. They unleashed their firepower. I'm going to call out one player who I thought did an amazing job in the second half. I didn't think he had a particularly good first half. Was Joe Palmer came in and started getting rebounds. That was one of the issues through the entire game. They struggled to get rebounds. Palmer ended up getting five rebounds, most of which came during that run. And he was an integral part of what happened. So it was key that he stepped up. And then, you know, once they got to that 11-point lead, it was pretty much over. It was just a matter of them professionally closing out the game, and they managed to do that. So I know I rambled a little bit, but I'll tell you what, it was a good win over a good team. And I think that's a really good start for this team when you have the two leading scorers are the two newcomers that you really need, that you're going to count on, and Joel Scott with 18 points and Neek Clifford with 16. And we know what we had coming back with Stevens and Cartier. They came through, and now it's just a matter of the other guys filling in and building upon building with the rest of the players.
No, you talk about the switching. Both times that La Tech went on their runs, they went on a pretty good run in the first half, and they did it again in the second half. They were just blowing by our whoever was out there on the wing. They'd get it and then just drive straight to the basket, and we weren't switching on that, but we also weren't having help side defenders step in front. And once they made that adjustment with the high screens and switching on that, we took that away. And you could tell that in that second half, they were tired, and they were everything when they couldn't drive to the lane and were having to settle for jumpers. Everything was short because they didn't have those legs underneath them. And that's when we made that run. And that's one of the huge things about this team is we're going to be deep, and we're going to be able to do that to a lot of teams because they weren't having the rotations, and they weren't having the subs like we were. And it was fun seeing that. And all 10 that got in, everybody that got in, even Johnson, who played 3 minutes, Casey Evans, I liked what they brought just by, I mean, they kept moving. They didn't seem like it was too much for them. I'm excited about this team, Steve. I mean, you laid it out there. You know, the opening half, it really looked like five guys playing with each other for the first time in a real game. And you could tell they just didn't seem like they just didn't have the feel. It also kind of seemed like a team that put it to Minnesota and Oregon that were kind of feeling themselves. And it just, I don't want to say weren't ready, but it kind of came across that way.
You know, the thing that they really struggled with yesterday, the rebounding, I mean, they got murdered on the boards, let's be honest. That wasn't apparent in the preseason, the closed-door games with Minnesota and Oregon. They out-rebounded those two teams in those closed-door scrimmages. And so it was a surprise to everybody on the staff that they just got killed on the boards last night. And it wasn't just the scoring that that Louisiana Tech was doing, but you saw how devastating CSU is in transition when they get rebounds. They are fast. They run to spots, and boy, can they score in a hurry. Isaiah Stevens running the show, but you've got guys, you know, the Josiah Strongs, the Jalen Lakes. Neek Clifford is tremendous in transition. And then obviously even Cartier and Scott, they can get down the floor too. And like I said, they're devastating. And that's where that run was all driven by the fact that they finally started getting missed shots and getting enough rebounds. And they were just blowing by Louisiana Tech. And that's going to be critical for this team. They're going to be a great offensive team. I thought defensively they were actually pretty good in the first half. I think some of the changes Louisiana Tech made in the second half exposed them a little bit. But then when they, like I said, they switched to a little different way of guarding people with that 12-minute mark. I think we saw the defense emerge, and I think they're going to be improved on defense. But boy, that rebounding thing was a little bit of a concern. I think they missed Rashaun Mbemba coming off the bench yesterday. We need to get him back. He's a big body that will get rebounds. So that's going to be critical that he starts, he gets healthy and starts playing.
Sorry, I was muted. There's been some pretty good discussion on the message boards today, opinions on why we struggled a little bit in the rebound department. Someone even said it's just something that Nico chooses to live with because they like to get back in transition. Is that something you see, Steve, or was this just kind of an off? I mean, the offensive rebound, we had zero offensive rebounds. I'm not sure if I've ever seen that. But is that just something, is that a symptom, or is this something that was kind of a weird circumstance last night where we just didn't get any rebounds?
A little bit of both. I mean, it's part of the defensive strategy. It's not to give up transition baskets. That's where, a lot of easy baskets are scored in transition. And so they don't pound the glass with three or four guys unless it's a kind of a late situation where you absolutely need a rebound. They might only go after it with one or two guys, with three guys already drifting back when the shot goes up. But I will tell you right now, I don't think any of us will ever have ever seen a game with zero offensive rebounds. The fact that you can miss 25 shots in a game and one doesn't just fall to somebody is highly unusual. So that was just one of those things. But give credit to Louisiana Tech. They were very, very good. They swarmed the glass and they had a lot of pretty good sized athletes, and that was part of it. But I was more concerned with how CSU, the defensive rebounding. A lot of, there were some misses, and especially in the first half where I had a little bit of vision, a little bit of deja vu from last year where other teams would start playing volleyball against the backboard. There were a couple of sequences where that happened, and those are very frustrating to watch as a fan, and I'm sure very frustrating as a head coach. Nico was, I think, shocked, and I know the assistants were shocked as well that they struggled so much on the boards.
Well, Joel Scott had 18, Nick Clifford had 16, Isaiah with 15, and Pat Cardi had 14. Pat probably could have had 20 plus, but he missed a few point blank shots. Kind of the first look we got of a game action anyway, of Neek and Joel Scott and Josiah, really first time we've seen him play extended minutes there, really. And then Casey Evans, as we're calling him, I guess, but any initial thoughts on what you saw from these guys, these newer guys?
Oh, I'm excited Joel Scott and Neek Clifford. I thought they were tremendous yesterday. Neek maybe did a couple of things that are a little tangential to what you might want to see, but all in all, their ability and their fit, the fact that Neek was 2 for 2 from the perimeter. He was a 28% shooter last year with CU. He's a good shooter, but he got the ball in good spots. I'm excited about that. Casey Evans, Kyan Evans, played 4 great minutes, had a steal and a layup, had a pass out and a run out where he tried to dunk over a bigger guy and missed. And that's a little bit of I would categorize that as a little bit of a cocky but freshman mistake. He's playing.
Yeah, he needed to lay that one down.
Not high school players anymore. You know what I mean? And so he'll learn, but that's okay. He did well. He did really well. He didn't. Josiah, I thought Josiah Strong was kind of in the first half, and you could see him grow into the game. Jalen Lake did the same thing. I think those two guys are going to be so important. They can score a lot more than they did last night. I thought they were just off in the first half, and they started growing into the game as it went further. I wanted to bring one thing up that I thought was hilarious. You know, Isaiah ended up with a double-double, 15 points and 10 assists. That last assist came with 1.1 seconds to go on the Josiah Strong layup, which is absolutely, unnecessary. CSU was up 6, but none of us picked it up during the game. They added that assist to the stats board about 5 minutes after it happened. After the game, I went up and I was teasing Isaiah. I was just hammering on him. I said, "You're sitting on 9 assists with 6 minutes to go, and you're just shooting a bunch of crappy shots. What are you doing? Pass the ball, get that 10th assist." And he looks at me, starts laughing. And then on my way out, I ran into Isaiah's parents, who are, they come to a lot of the games. And I said, "Hey, he got his double-double on that last shot." And they were laughing, going, "We were just talking about that. It was funny. We couldn't believe he didn't have that 10th assist earlier." I said, "I was just gassing him about it." But it was kind of fun to see. I don't think Isaiah had a particularly great game. I thought he was just kind of Isaiah. He's a best player on the floor. After the game, the coach of Louisiana Tech gave him a long hug and a long talk, and I'm sure he told him he's an unbelievable player, because he is. And I think for Isaiah, it was an average game. He missed a few shots. I thought he had a couple of bad turnovers. But in the end, there he is with 15 points. There he is with 10 assists. Just an amazing thing. But it was fun. It was fun giving him a little gas. And he's really good with that kind of stuff. He knew. Hey. He knows everything that's going on when there's every stat that's going on. He knew he was stuck on 9. But good, he figured he'd get 10.
Good
that's,
players win.
That layup got some people money, too.
Good players win. Great players cover.
Yep.
So, did you have it at 7?
If you got that line early at 7.5, that was the cover. So
yeah, I know it got up to, I think it was 9.5 at game time, wasn't it?
It spiked like that. Point. It spiked a point late, but yeah. Were you surprised to see so few minutes from Kyle Evans and then Javonte Johnson?
I'm not surprised. I thought if you look at where they've been at, you know, if you go to practices, Joe Palmer has definitely stepped up ahead of Javonte Johnson and ahead of Jack Payne in that wing position off the bench. You know, we have that top six as well identified, and Joe has established himself as that seventh player. So was I surprised? No, Javonte isn't. He's a much better player than what he's been showing. He has a lot of work to do in practice. He's to get better, and we need him to emerge. He's definitely a key part of the team, but he's not there yet in terms of being able to contribute. So the 3 minutes, I didn't expect to see him much more. Kyle Evans is behind Mbemba on the. The only reason he played was because Mbemba was out with injury.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, he came in and played a few minutes and didn't particularly do anything. Didn't get some key rebounds. And he was just basically filling in space to keep to deal with the fact that Cartier and I had two fouls. Guys had two fouls. So, you know, he's there. He played minutes, but I don't think he's – I'll be honest with you. I don't think he's going to emerge this year, Joel. I think we're going to need Mbemba to step up and be the big off the bench to come in and be the defensive stopper, get rebounds, and score a little bit.
Any thoughts on Wright State Friday?
I'll do a podcast preview. I'm going to try see if I can stop by a practice or at least talk to Coach Brian Cooley, assistant coach. Brian came here from Wright State, and he actually did the scheduling. So he's the one that got that Wright State game. They're a good team. They picked up a transfer, immediate eligibility, who played with them 2 years ago, went to Ohio State last year, and got an immediate waiver to play again this year at Wright State. And he's an all-first-team all-conference guy from 2 years ago. They have a returning first team all conference guard. They got two players that can really play that might even be NBA level that can score and fill it up. And the coach there, Scott Nagy, came from San Diego State, or not San Diego, South Dakota State. Very, very good coach, very, very tough style. They'll have some 3-point shooters as well. They won't be as athletic as Louisiana Tech, but it'll be a battle, and it'll be a heck of a good game. CSU will be favored, very similar, probably 7-8 points. They're going to have to do a great job defensively of making it hard for the two guys. One of them's last name is Calvin. I can't remember the name of the other guy, but the guard, they're going to have to do a good job keeping him, forcing him into tough mid-range shots. And then the other guy is the wing who can fill it up. And They're going to have to do a good job against him and then make sure they don't lose 3-point shooters. But it'll be a good game. I'm looking for a next step, a step up from CSU in this one, maybe to come out and play 40 minutes instead of just, 8 great minutes like they did last night.
Well, you'll have to cheer double hard because it's Willow's birthday party. So I will not be able to make it up on Friday.
Well, happy birthday to Willow.
That's too bad. Yeah, happy birthday to Willow. Why isn't her birthday party being held at Moby Arena?
Well, it was for her 7th birthday, but now it's about Skate City. So we'll be doing that.
Awesome.
So, yeah, so it'll be good. I'm looking forward to it. And obviously, this should be a good crowd on a Friday night before a football weekend. The crowd was decent last night. Students showed out. And I expect the students to, as long as this team keeps playing, I think we'll see a lot of students, especially leading into the St. Mary's and the CU games, which are coming up in a few weeks.
It's a lot of good games coming up. It's going to be a fun season. All right, before we bring in Milt, let me pause and tell you about Ginger and Baker. Stop in for an amazing dinner at the Cache where you can enjoy fine steaks and chops, good whiskey, and select from their award-winning wine list. By the way, they now have Whiskey Wednesdays, where all whiskey is 50% off, including their Ginger and Baker Old Elk Single Barrel Whiskey. It's normally $18, but only $9 on Wednesdays. If you're looking for a more casual dining outing, check out the cafe with a wide offering of American comfort food classics, or try something from the Grab and Go case in the market, which is stocked with all kinds of scratch-made breakfasts and lunches. Ginger Baker also features a coffee shop, event spaces, and a teaching kitchen, the latter of which has a ton of great events every month, all month. And to tell you how to make cocktails and special meals, check out gingerandbaker.com/calendar for a full list. This place is amazing, guys. Support our friend Ginger Graham and treat yourself to a world-class experience at our favorite place, Ginger and Baker. All right, super happy to have in this guest today, Milt Palacio, a former basketball grade at CSU from 1996 to 1999. In those 3 years, top 20 all time in multiple different scoring categories. He averaged 18 points per game in his senior year in 1999 en route to a first team all-WAC honor. And he's still third in career assists behind only Ryan Yoder and Isaiah Stevens, who Isaiah recently passed him. He's third in career steals at 147 behind only Pierce Horning and Kendall Moore. He signed with the Vancouver Grizzlies out of CSU as an undrafted free agent. Spent 7 years in the NBA with several teams, played an additional 6 overseas before moving to the sidelines as a coach. And he just went into the CSU Hall of Fame a couple weekends ago. He's one of the best I've ever seen play at Moby, the way you could finish at the rim and the way he got his teammates involved, moving the ball around, setting up his teammates with good shots, much like our current point guard, Isaiah Stevens. And he also played some great defense. So, Milt, we're super happy to have you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me. Man, you said 99 made me feel a little old, but it was good. It was fun.
You're still younger than me. So, but hey, congrats on the Hall of Fame. What did that mean to you?
Ah, man, it meant a lot, man. I think the biggest thing was just all the hard work, all the late nights, putting in that work. Definitely at school, it's a lot of, sacrifices. A lot of times you want to hang out with your guys, hang out with the boys, club nights. And, my roommate and I, we were at the gym. He was up here for the induction, and we reminisced on those nights, man, playing one-on-one, getting shots up, just all the little stuff you had to do, the disciplinary things that you had to be to get to that point. And I think all that came back to me. So it was a little emotional when talking to Joe Parker, but I thought that maybe one day that I could, but like I said, during the induction, you never go to school or you never go to CSU thinking that you're going to be a Hall of Fame. You're just thinking, man, let me get a scholarship and, let me play some good basketball. And that's the only thing I tried to concentrate on.
Hey, well, what are you up to these days? I saw that you are living up north, you're in Loveland, and you got great family. And what are you doing for work? Tell us about all that.
Yeah. So, I'm training a lot of kids out here. start. They want me to start an AAU team. I'm not sure if I want to do that yet. A lot of kids that I train, their parents want me to kind of get after that. I'm coaching the Belize 18U team. We're going to start recruiting. We're going to start doing some things with that, you know, flying around the country and seeing a couple kids. You know, they qualified last summer, and now they wanted to bring me in. I was the men's senior team coach, but that kind of went by the wayside. So now they're bringing me for the 18U, which I'm very humbled and very appreciative for. Still got my nose into basketball. Started a little tequila thing with some good friends of mine, and that's kind of blowing up. Got some things in the makings with, you know, mindset and competitive nature with kids that we're going to start putting together. So got some stuff in the workings, but basketball, that's always going to be my passion.
Well, tell me more about this tequila stuff.
Yeah, so I partnered with a tequila. It's called Vuelo Tequila. Our CEO, he's our CEO, matter of fact, he went to Rocky Mountain High School, which is crazy. And the GM that's under him, he was my high school teammate. So he kind of brought me aboard and made me kind of business development. And I've just been trying to, you know, get it out, get people to get it. Got some pretty big names that's out there trying to, you know, get the brand out there. RZA from the Wu-Tang, he's an investor. So he's been doing some stuff where, you know, we're talking to people with. We had dinner with Patrick Surtain. We've been talking to Sophie Smith. So we've been trying to get it out there a little bit. Sophie Smith's dad, Kenny's a really good friend of mine. So Dave Taylor, I definitely got to send you guys a bottle so you guys can taste it and, you know, tell me your honest opinion about it.
Yeah, we'd love to share that at the tailgate.
I was gonna say, you know where our tailgate is.
Do we play home this weekend?
Yes, we do. We do.
I have a bottle here. I just went to San Diego. I brought a lot more bottles back with me. I will be at the tailgate with a bottle of Vuelo.
All right.
Hey, Milt, real quick. Milt, did you play against Kenny when he was at Wyoming?
I didn't. I missed Kenny. Kenny was above me a couple years before me. So I didn't.
All right. Hey, it will be featured at our tequila tasting event for Somo CSU next summer.
Awesome. Oh, yeah, definitely. No, definitely. We're going to do that, man. It's been fun just, you know, having a couple of tastes around town and, you know, getting it out there. It's, you know, I'm here in Loveland. So it's at Wicked Tequila here. We just got a new one in, a double repo. So it's been rolling. It's been fun, man. And that's been really fun. So, but this weekend, I'm definitely going to bring the reposado. That's my favorite. So I think you guys will enjoy it.
All right. Can't wait.
Yeah.
So you grew up in the LA area. You went to Sierra High School.
Yep.
And you were league MVP twice. You were conference MVP, all city. You ended up at Midland College in Texas. With your resume, how did that happen?
So the biggest thing is with the SATs. I passed the SAT the last time that you could pass it, the last one. So a lot of schools kind of backed off of me, didn't think that I was going to be able to pass it. A lot of schools also told me I could walk on and things like that. I you know, being a kid from Belize, knowing my parents were, you know, foreign parents coming over here, and I knew that we didn't have the money to walk on and things like that. You know, I always promised my parents that, you know, my sophomore year in high school, I said, you know, you're not going to pay for college for me. So I'm going to put my mind to that and get after it. The funny thing about Midland, man, I mean, my story is so crazy, man, because, and also I always tell kids, man, like, you never stop believing, you never stop grinding, because I was a throw-in. Like, they wanted my center on my team. And my coaches happened to say, hey, listen, we got a kid that passed it late. You know, just take a look at him, see if you like him. But he passed the test late, so he only has 1 year to do it at Midland. And the coach was like, all right, whatever. I went out there. We played. I got after a little bit. I mean, that night at dinner, he offered me the scholarship. And, you know, I took it home, and I said, you know, I'll think about it. And I had a couple schools come in late, you know, wanting me to walk on. But I said, you know, Midland's giving me a full ride. I'm going to do that. But I told my parents, I said, we all sat down. It's crazy. We all sat down at dinner table. I said, listen, I'm only doing 1 year. I'm gone. And they were like, okay, we'll see. And it was fortunate, you know, a couple months after that, Colorado State started recruiting me. UNLV started recruiting me. USC back at home started recruiting me. But I always told my parents I didn't really want to come home. I thought it was going to be too much distraction with friends and family. So, and Colorado State said, listen, man, you know, we'll give you the ball for 3 years. So I said, hey, that sounds good to me.
Hey, you just answered the next question. what your recruitment was like with Stu.
It's funny because I called my JUCO coach. I called my Midland coach and said, hey, man, I just wanted to tell him that, you know, when I got inducted to the Hall of Fame, he was just like, man, I'm so happy for you. You know, couldn't be a better person. But he said, did I ever tell you the story how you got recruited? And I said, no. He said, well, Colorado State came to watch another guy on my team. Coach Lawrence, God, his name is missing my head, but I'll get it. He was at Utah State, the head coach, and what's his name? Randy Ray. I always get him and Lawrence Frank mixed up because they both short and they both scream. So Randy Ray comes to Midland and he's recruiting a teammate of mine. I don't know this. I'm just, you know, I'm at practice, you know, going hard. And my coach is like, and my coach said, well, we're looking for a point guard. And my JUCO coach said, if you really want a point guard, that's the kid you want. You want Palacio. And Ray was like, his numbers aren't jumping off the pages. He's only averaging 8 points. He's only averaging 4 or 5 assists. But then I didn't turn the ball over. And I was shooting maybe 37, 38% from the three. But he was like, listen, he takes good shots. He's going to run your team. He's tough as nails. That's the kid. And Ray was like, came back a couple weeks later, watched me practice, watched me play. And then they end up, you know, started to recruit me. So that was a kind of crazy story that they didn't even come in the gym for me. You know, they came in for one of my teammates. And I came here nervous as hell for my recruit visit. I knew just the biggest thing, and I wanted to go so hard. I went so hard when we played. And that morning, the next morning, Stu offered the scholarship. But the thing was, my JUCO coach told Stu, because Stu didn't like to go on road trips. He didn't like to recruit. So Stu told my coach Rafferty told Stu, you better go see this kid's parents or he's not going. And Stu hit it off with my mom, and she loves Stu so much. And I just remember her saying, yeah, you're going to sign with Colorado State. And I was kind of leaning towards UNLV, but my mom loved Colorado State so much. And it's crazy because talking to Spook Victor, he wasn't, I didn't play with him, but he played before me, a year before me. And we went to lunch probably a couple months back. And he's like, Milt, when you came in there and played, I told Stu and them, you guys are wasting your time. This kid won't sign. And I said, Stu, I said, Spook, you know how nervous I was at that, you know, recruitment visit. So those kind of stories to hear, man, is so dope. And it was fun. And me and Spook always laugh about that.
That's awesome. You Spook actually came in the tailgate last game. You were a little busy. I'll let it slide.
Yeah, I was a little busy. But this week I will be there. I promise you with a bottle. What about Avoilo?
Now, so you stepped in as a starter immediately your sophomore year. We had you, Jamil Mahmood, Chili, Chris Jansen, and Matty Barnett. You went 20-9, but then lost to SMU in the WAC tournament. Didn't get invited to a postseason. How devastating was that? And what did that do for that next year and the year after?
I you know what's crazy? It was really, really devastating because we really thought we were going to get into that to the tournament because of a 2020 win season. I just remember us in the locker room. We were all down and we were sitting there like, and I think we went to go play Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken. We were down, man. We were hurt, but you know, we just all looked at each other and said, man, you know what? This summer, you know, we got to take it very, very serious, and we got to come back and we got to get better. We were really down that we lost to SMU being a favorite. I think we were the favorite going into that tournament, and SMU shot the lights out. Credit to them, but we were down. We were hurting, but you know, one thing about I just can remember our summertime, man. Our summertime games, our summertime workouts were very, very intense.
Yeah, so that happened 2 years in a row that we lost to SMU. And then, yeah, then you made it to NIT as a junior. What was it like, though, going into your senior year when everybody graduated and it was just you, basically?
That was a crazy summer because it's funny. Chauncey Billups reached out to me to try to transfer to CU. And he was like, listen, you're going to be alone. CU's going to have a little team, XYZ. You probably should go there. That was kind of – it was crazy because I was kind of weighing that, but, you know, the portal and all that wasn't popular. And, my dad was kind of strict. He was kind of, listen, whatever you start, you're going to finish. So I kind of entertained it for a little bit. But then I get up – I'm representing Belize national team in the summertime, and I get a call from Richie McKay. And Richie McKay's like, hey, man, I'm going to be the new coach. How's it going? Blah, blah, blah. He was like, so what do you think? I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know what to think. Well, I guess we'll see. You know, we'll see when I get there because I was out of town the whole summer. I was in Belize traveling, you know, different countries and playing with the national team. So when I got here, me and Richie, we hit it off really well. And, you know, his biggest thing that I love, how much he held me in high standards to play well, you know, going to the media saying he has an NBA player and all this. And I'm telling him, shut up. No, you don't. I'm okay, but I'm not no NBA player. Me and him, we got after it a little bit about that. Richie's a really, really religious guy, and he doesn't really like too much cursing. So I got kicked out of practice a couple of times for cursing. But, I mean, I got kicked out about 15 minutes later. Coach came to the locker room and said, man, get your butt back in the gym. So it wasn't I didn't get kicked out the whole practice. But, it, you know, I really got to give Richie honestly, Stu also, because – even though we played a system game and we played a system, Stu, I think that taught me how to be a point guard, how to look for different players, how to get guys involved, how to run an offense. When I got to the NBA, it wasn't as hard because they give you 1,000 plays in the NBA. But with Stu, we had about 50, 60 plays. So it's not like I didn't know how to run an offense. So I have to credit Stu and Richie. I think Stu helped me definitely with just being a point guard. And Richie was the one that gave me the confidence to shoot the ball. I remember my first game, I think I had 11 shots, and Richie looked at me and said, we'll never win a game with you shooting only 11 shots. But I wasn't the, you know, try to shoot a type of guy, but I got a little confident and got a little aggressive, and it helped me for my career.
I'll never forget Stu with his 3-ring binder where he would open it up and call the plays.
This play right here. X-Wing Yo. 3.
Hey, 33, baby. 33. We're looking for a shooter.
Hey, Milt, I saw you credited Richie for being kind of the first person to make you believe you could be a pro. Tell us a little bit about that and what he meant to you.
He meant a lot, man. He meant so much. He was just, you know, he was a little young too. So, you know, Richie would jump into practices with us. Play, you know, in the scrimmages and things like that. Still can play. Called every foul. I think that's why I got kicked out too, because he called foul and I knew I didn't foul him, and I tried to go after him. But it was just so good how he really believed in me, and that's one thing I could say. He sat me down and just always used to tell me, "Hey, man, I seen this guy play. I seen that guy play. You're just as good. You're just." And I used to always be like, "Man, like stop it. Like I never wanted to think that way. I just like let me just." Get through this college basketball, and I'll think about that after. You know, I always thought I was good enough to play in Europe, but to play on the NBA level, I was like, man, those guys are too good. They're too skilled. It's crazy because now every kid think that they can play in the NBA, and I'm like, you guys are. It's amazing how you think it's that easy. And I was the one I was thinking that it was too hard to play in the NBA. So, he just gave me that confidence, man. And I think I had a hell of a summer also going into my senior year. I was able to go to the Michael Jordan camp and coach that camp. And Michael Jordan had just retired. It was 99. He just retired. So he was just off his 6th championship. And he played with us. And I was playing with all the top guys in the country. Mike Bibby at that time, Miles Simon, Jason Hart, Baron Davis, Kenny Bruin. You know, all the top guys were there. So I kind of got my confidence there where, you know, I was playing against those guys night in and night out, and that helped me a lot. And then, like I say, I think the cherry on top, you know, was Richie just telling me, you know, a lot of things that I have to do for this team for us to win and for us to play at a high level. And I just tried to answer the call.
So your senior year, we make the run in the NIT.
Yep.
It included beating down CU in Moby. It was one of the loudest games I have ever been to.
Yeah.
What was that run like, and especially that game?
It you know, it's crazy. It was a hell of a run, and I was a little pissed because I got hurt at the Mississippi State game, and I tweaked my knee a little bit, so I had to wear a big old knee brace against CU. But I wanted to beat them so bad, man. I didn't want to lose to them because we lost to them, you know, early in that year in the preseason game, and not for almost a preseason, but the early games. And I just wanted to beat them because, you know, everybody was talking about the other point guard, Jacquay Walls, going to the NBA and things like that. And I wanted to just prove that I was good enough and that I could play on that level. Coach Patton, great guy. Always. We talk to this day. And I, you know, like I said, it was just really, we were really prepared for them. I think you're right. Moby was the loudest that I've heard Moby at that time in NIT. And it was a hell of a game. You know, I still have memories of the Cal game. I think we missed a layup with like 20 some seconds that we probably would have gone up by two. I remember us being down at halftime, huge, in that Cal game, and I came in the locker room and was like, these guys are dead. And we kind of looked up to Cal because they're in the Pac 10 at that time. And, you know, we kind of gave them too much respect. And I kept telling the guys, I promise we get this game to about 4 to 5 points, they're gonna start freezing up, which they did. And that was fun. And, you know, still some of the Cal guys on that team I see, and they're always, you know, talking about that game. So it was a hell of a run, man. I wish we would have gone to the, you know, we were able to get to the Garden and play, and I thought that'd be really, really dope.
Yeah, it was fun watching, fun being there. So
that was now,
you talked about your parents already. Where at in Belize are they from?
They're from the south in Dangriga. So they're more south. Yeah, my dad and my mom, they came over, you know, just trying to give their family. I'm the last of nine kids, so it's a lot of us. So you know, just trying to give us that. Just trying to give us that, you know, that level of playing field. That's okay.
So what was it like representing your country in 99 and 2009?
It was amazing, man. It was amazing. You know, the crazy thing is when we won, I want to say in 96, no, 97, I think, I can't remember, but when us winning the gold medal for the Caribbean Games was such an honor. To this day, when I go back to Belize, it's a lot of the older folks, they're still talking about that. They're still talking about how crazy that gym was. Just wearing that jersey, just the journey that my parents went through, man, the different things that they went through with trying to get here and trying to get a better life for their kids. You know, wearing that jersey was very, very sentimental to me, to my family. Even my kids, they love it. They still wear a Belize Palacio jersey. It was dope, man, because, you know, a little country like that, for us to make some noise at that time, we even end up beating Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico was kind of, you know, ranked in the rankings. It was fun, man. It was amazing. It was a hell of a ride. All my teammates were great, man. It was just fun to be that leader for them because I knew they all looked up to me, but I always just made sure everybody was okay. Everybody was scoring. I wasn't, you know, the main focus of that team. So that was fun. That was so much fun.
And did I see is your son playing in Belize right now, or he played last year?
He played last year. Yep, he played last year. And it's funny, man, when you get that call one day, he called me halfway through the season. He's like, Dad, it's crazy how everybody just sees my last name or hear my last name and just – they just ran out the red carpet for me. He was like, but – He was like, thank you. It's not even because how good you were, it's just how you treated people. So that was a good call to hear.
Last year in San Pedro, man, they were talking about you.
San Pedro.
They were talking. Yep. So
love San Pedro, man. I mean, it's crazy because my dad used to live in San Pedro. He was a teacher in San Pedro for years. So he taught a lot of older people that's, you know, out there doing a thing now. So it's good.
Hey, Mel, you played 7 years in the NBA. You were with six different teams.
Yep.
How tough was that? I mean, that's six different coaches, six different systems, six different cities. Like, how was that for you?
I say it's never too tough when you're in the best league in the world. And when you're around the best players in the world, it's never too tough. You can adjust to anything as long as you got that NBA logo on your chest where you've been thinking about that since you were a kid. I could have played with 19 different teams in 4 years. It wouldn't have mattered to me being with the best players in the world, playing against the best player in the world. I heard a stat, I think like a couple of weeks ago, somebody said there's only been like 5,200 players to ever play in the NBA. So to be in an elite class like that, you know, it wasn't tough at all. It was just, you know, amazing time in my career to look at some guys that you always looked up on TV, watch them play, being side by side. I can still remember my first game playing the Blazers, looking across, seeing Scottie Pippen and Rasheed Wallace and Smitty and Damon Stoudemire and those guys, that team that lost to the Lakers. So it's amazing. I have some amazing teammates, you know, from the likes of Darren Williams to Vince Carter to Jalen Rose to Boozer. It was amazing. The Paul Pierce's, the Antoine Walkers, you know, the Mike Bibby's. It was great, man. It was, you know, you think of it as a kid, you never know if it's going to be a reality, but, you know, to get there and to compete with those guys and to just get better every year, it was a dream.
Hey, Milt, sticking with your career in the NBA, out of all the teams you played for, what was the favorite team you played for?
I hate to admit it, but it's the Celtics because I grew up a Lakers fan. I was a big Lakers fan. It was crazy. I used to send shorts and T-shirts and sweaters home, and none of my friends would wear it, but it's okay. I think to this day, they said they still got tags on it. But, you know, I think just with the – just with the history of that organization and just knowing that, man, you know, seeing a lot of greats, you know, it was just the atmosphere, the fans are crazy. I went to a Lakers game last year, Lakers Celtics. I took myself to a Lakers Celtics and about 20 Celtics fans ran by me. It's like, hey, man, hey, is that Miracle Milton? And it's crazy. Like they still remember that. They still remember the shot and everything. So it's Boston is a special place. Always gonna be a special place in my heart. So even though I was a Lakers fan, you know, that rivalry is real. When you become a Celtic, you start to hate the Lakers, which sucks. But you know, I thought the biggest thing is just those Hall of Famers and those legends coming back in the locker room, just sitting next to Bill Russell, talking to him was amazing.
That's awesome. I grew up in Philadelphia, so I was bred to hate the Celtics.
Of course.
But obviously respected them because they used to win the championships every year when I was young, with guys like Russell and Sam Jones and Casey. I could go through that whole Havlicek is the sixth man. That's unbelievable history back there. So in all those years, who was your favorite teammate? Who'd you really enjoy playing with?
I'll say two. So Paul Pierce was really one of my really favorite teammates of paper. He's a little crazy. He's a little crazy at times, but his work ethic is unbelievable. We played one-on-one every single morning before practice. And for a guy like that who didn't have to, that just tells you how much he wanted to win and how much he wanted to perfect his craft. And, you know, we grew up together. We grew up together playing AU ball from 9 years old and on and playing in high school together. So we kind of knew each other, but just seeing his work ethic, playing 42 minutes one night, coming to practice, ready to practice. And the coach telling him, no, you got to sit out was crazy. And he's just like, okay, Milt, let's go on the side. Let's play some one-on-one and things like that. And I would say Vince Carter, man, it was a really, really good friend of mine. Vince was at my wedding. Just a really good guy and just a really good overall guy. And Vince really didn't look at himself as a superstar. I mean, I used to always say, Ben, do you know how good you are? And it was crazy. But him just being a really good person, I thought that, you know, I love that because as much as you you know, you're in the NBA, you're a big time celebrity, you're big time this, you whatever. If you're a good person, I always kind of gravitate to that.
So Carter and Pierce, two of your favorite teammates. How about in terms of opponents? Who's the toughest opponent you ever had the opportunity to guard? What was that like?
I always say the top three. My top three would be Allen Iverson, Stephon Marbury, and Steve Nash. Three very, very talented guys in their own ways. Nash, because he can shoot the ball, you always have to be on your P's and Q's rated for him to guard him from the three-point line to the mid-range. Stephon Marbury, just so explosive, man. A lot of kids don't understand how good he was. And Allen Iverson, of course, that's just a legacy of him. But just how fast he was and how explosive he was and how, I mean, at 6'1", 6 foot 6'1", how he could take over a game was crazy. It was just amazing to be out there with those guys, but to guard them and to have that job that night, you know, it was a lot of sleepless nights and me trying to get to bed early.
I can't imagine trying to guard Iverson. I saw Iverson play his rookie year when he was with the when he was with the Sixers.
Yeah,
I saw him play a game down in Washington. Yeah, and I was amazed. The guy was crazy. He threw his body around. He played 100 miles an hour. And what an incredible basketball player he was. I can't imagine trying to guard a guy like that.
Just super fearless. And, you know, you have scout reports on guys. For me, my thing, the biggest thing guarding him was just not letting him put the ball in his right hand. But that's easier said than done. So, you know, it was a lot of times screaming help and, you know, trying to get after him. But it was fun, man. You know, to this day, I think I saw him a couple years ago and he always just respects it, man. You were a tough SOB when you guarded me, so.
Hey, you brought up the Miracle Milt moment. Can you break that down for anyone who has not seen that? By the way, just go to YouTube and search Miracle Milt. Just an amazing play for the Boston Celtics against the Nets in 2000. You break that down because that was truly stunning.
You know, it's crazy because it's funny because I always understand, like when I watch TV and see these guys and they get into different little things, and I always say, people don't understand what these players go to. People don't realize that I was on a 10-day contract. I was on a 10-day when I hit that shot. So my 10-day was coming up in 2 days. And that's when they kept me around because they were like, okay, this little lucky bastard hit a shot. But it's crazy. I was on my 10-day. I think I was on my eighth, maybe ninth day. And, you know, 1.8 seconds to go in the game, and I'm sitting next to Walter McCarty, and he's like, you know, coach is about to put you in. I'm like, come on, man, this game is over. They're going to inbound, and it's over. He was like, watch. He has a towel over his head, so over his mouth, so he's talking to me. And 2 minutes later, 30 seconds later, Rick Pitino looks up and screams, Milt! So I sit down. He's kind of laughing. He taps me. And Rick's just like, listen, if we steal it, throw it at the basket. I don't care what happens. And he was kind of drawing up what he think, well, what, you know, because in those time of moments, all our coaches, they kind of know what they're going to run because they have to have that all broken down. So they're like, listen, they're going to do this. He's like, Milt, you're going to be on Stephon. He's going to try to push you around and then get open. So I was like, okay. And like I said, basketball is a little bit of skill and it's a lot of luck too. So, you know, I happened to see the ball right there and I grabbed it. And the craziest thing is that Paul Pierce was so wide open, if you look at that. But I kept thinking that 1.8 clock in my head. And I was like, no way I could pass it to him. And I threw it up. And I'm not going to even take credit for it. It was luck, but it was a hell of a play. And it's still getting recognized to the day. So I'll take it. I love it.
Probably didn't have to buy a drink in that town for a little while after that.
Yeah, it was fun.
Milt, I'm going to give you some advice. You need to start saying you knew the shot was good as soon as it left your hand.
I know, but that's me. I know. It was a little luck involved. So it was fun though. It's fun.
Hey, well, after your NBA career, you went overseas and played in Serbia, Greece, Spain. It stints in Puerto Rico, Israel, Lithuania. What was your favorite stop there, would you say? You got to see some pretty cool parts of the world.
I would say Spain and Serbia. And the reason why, Serbia, you know, was my first stop, Partizan. It's unbelievable how crazy that place is, how much they know basketball, how much they love basketball. Getting to see Joker played when he was a young kid. You know, they're pointing out to me who he was before the world saw him. That's so competitive. So it was to the point, I think we lost one game and I went to go eat lunch and people were like, what are you doing out? You guys just lost. So that was kind of crazy little feeling. You don't get that feeling in the States much. And Spain, I would have to say, because we won the Spanish title, being underdogs against Barcelona, a team that should have won it, but we came in and won it. So I definitely have to say, put Spain up there as one of my tops because we had an unbelievable team, and we played so hard, and our coach pushed us to the limit. So it was fun. I mean, some other spots, Israel was really nice. Puerto Rico is a very, very nice place to play basketball, but when it's with the levels of high level basketball, Serbia and Spain are the ones that's up top.
Is the game much different over there? Or is at the end of the day, basketball is basketball?
No, it's a lot much different. You can play zone, so I always think just like Luka and Joker said, how it's much harder to score there. It is a lot harder because the NBA is so much wide open. And now you can take guys one on one. They don't zone as much. In Europe, you can zone all you want to. I really had to develop an outside jumper because a lot of people zone me a lot. So it's a tough game. I always say Europe is kind of like a high-level college game that the guys are very, very skilled. But you can see the world's catching up now. You see, the Spain is top three, Serbia's top two in the world. So you can see the world is catching up to the U.S., and it's a very, very competitive, hell of a league.
Well, just a couple more for you here before we let you go, bud. I really appreciate your time, but it's been great seeing you around campus a lot more these days. And I understand your daughter is a cheerleader at CSU.
Yep. Yeah, she's a cheerleader at CSU. She's having fun. She's having the time of her life right now. It's kind of hard for her to kind of balance cheerleading in school because she's doing the vet program, but she's loving it and it's fun. It's just fun to be there for her.
You have four kids?
Yes.
What ages?
24, 21, 18, and my little girl is 13.
That's fantastic. That's who runs the house.
Yep.
Good for you, buddy. Good for you.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. So I always ask our guests, first-time guests, about food from where they're from. So where's the best place to get a fry jack at?
Oh, man. That's tough. I would have to say it would have been my mom's was the best, but now in Belize, I'm not sure exactly where. Now everybody you can get them, but a lot of places. I think it's a place. It's like a Garifuna restaurant. It's on the water in Belize City, and I think you definitely can get some good ones there. So I would say that.
All right. I'll have to hit it up next time I'm there.
What is a fry jack? What is a fry jack?
It's kind of like our pancakes, but it's just a little fried and a little doughy and a little less doughy, a little more hollow. But it's pretty much our pancakes. We had a running joke in my family that my mom was like, okay, because they call it pancakes too. My mom was like, I'm gonna make pancakes this morning. And she put the fry jack on the table, and I started crying. I was like, I don't want Belizean pancakes. I want American pancakes. So my sister and my brothers, they still kill me to this day with that story.
All right. And then we were in school at the same time. Uh-huh. Where were your go-to bars?
My go-to bar was Sweet 52, I think, because Chuck ran that place, and I kind of knew Chuck, and DJ Sabotage was a DJ there, so that was kind of my place. I wasn't really, like I said, I didn't really get crazy. First time I got really plastered drunk was my senior year. I was 21 years old, man. I think it was a Long Island and a half, or maybe two, and that was it, pretty much it. I wasn't really out there like that. Like, I didn't really go out too much. I tried to go out with the guys just to, have that team bond stuff. But for me, I was in the basketball. I remember Matt used to always say, "Hey, I'm inviting you out, but I know you're not coming no way." So,
well, who wants to hang out with Maddie anyway?
I know.
Hey, last thing, Milt, are you around the current program much? What are your thoughts on where this program's heading?
Really good. I was at practice, I want to say last week. I think Nico's he's a great guy, man. He's so good. He's tough. The way they run practice, the way they do things there, man, it's so dope. Isaiah, he's an unbelievable player, man. I mean, you know, he's been around the program for a while. To be starting as a freshman, still doing it. Great player. You know, he tested the water last year a little bit. Now he can see what it takes to make it, come back this year, be dominant. You know, hopefully next year he gets that call and goes out there and play and be able to represent Colorado State on the NBA level. I think it's so dope. But, you know, Nico invites me to all the practice. Sometimes I just like to go in there and watch them practice. And, you know, still a little things for my 18 and youth, 18 and under team. But the thing is, you know, they're so welcoming and the guys are great. So I love it.
That's good, man. We're all excited about basketball and it's going to be a good year. All right. Well, that was Milt Palacio. Milt, thanks so much for your time, buddy. Really good talking with you and catching up. That will wrap our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great rest of your week. Get out to the basketball game Friday and get to the football game Saturday. Let's do a little double dip, get a couple wins. Thanks for listening. Go Rams.